ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, translation commentary by Srila Prabhupada, Canto 4, The Creation of the Fourth Order, Chapter 9, Dhruva Maharaj Returns Home. We have five texts today ending on number 62. Is 62 on the board? Okay. So I'll read 57 through 61 and then we'll chant 62 responsively. Text 57. This is continuing the description of King Uttanapada's city and palace. All the quadrangles, lanes, and streets in the city, and the raised sitting places at the crossings, were thoroughly cleansed and sprinkled with sandalwood water, and auspicious grains such as rice and barley, and flowers, fruits, and many other auspicious presentations were scattered all over the city. Because Dhruva Maharaj is returning home. Text 58-59, translation. Thus, as Dhruva Maharaj passed on the road, from every place in the neighborhood, all the gentle household ladies assembled to see him. And out of maternal affection, they offered their blessings, showering him with white mustard seed, barley, curd, water, newly grown grass, fruits, and flowers. In this way, Dhruva Maharaj, while hearing the pleasing songs sung by the ladies, entered the palace of his father. Text 60. Dhruva Maharaj thereafter lived in his father's palace, which had walls bedecked with highly valuable jewels. His affectionate father took particular care of him, and he dwelled in that house just as the demigods live in their palaces in the higher planetary systems. 61. The bedding in the palace was as white as the foam of milk and was very soft. The bedsteads were made of ivory with embellishments of gold, and the chairs, benches, and other sitting places and furniture were made of gold. Text 62. Yatra spatika kudyeshu. Did we say Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya? Yeah, we did. Sorry, senior moment. Again, yatra spatika kudyeshu mahamana kateshu cha manipradipa abhanti lalana ratna samyutaha yatra spatika kudyeshu Mahamarakateshu cha Manipradipa abhanti Lalana ratna samyutaha Yatra spatika kudyeshu Mahamarakateshu cha Manipradipa abhanti Lalana ratna samyutaha Ladies. Made of marble. Hudyeshu. On walls. Mahamarakateshu. Bedecked with valuable jewels like sapphires. Cha. Also. Manipradipaha. Lamps made of jewels. Abhanti. Shown. Lalana. Female figures. Ratna. Made of jewels. Samyutaha. Held by. This is Shukadev Goswami speaking. The palace of the king was surrounded by walls made of marble, with many engravings made of valuable jewels like sapphires, which depicted beautiful women with shining jewel lamps in their hands. Please repeat. The palace of the king was surrounded by walls made of marble and with many engravings made of valuable jewels like sapphires, which depicted beautiful women with shining jewel lamps in their hands. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The description of King Uttanapada's palace depicts the state of affairs many hundreds and thousands of years ago, long before Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled. Since it is described that Maharaj Dhruva ruled for 36,000 years, he must have lived in the Satya Yuga, when people lived for 100,000 years. The life duration in the four yugas are also mentioned in the Vedic literature. In the Satya Yuga, people used to live for 100,000 years. In the Treta Yuga, people lived for 10,000 years. In Dwapara Yuga, they lived for 1,000 years. And in this age, Kali Yuga, people may live up to 100 years. With the progressive advance of each new yuga, the duration of human life is reduced by 90%. From 100,000 to 10,000, from 10,000 to 1,000, and from 1,000 to 100. It is said that Dhruva Maharaj was the great-grandson of Lord Brahma. This indicates that Dhruva Maharaj's time was in the Satya Yuga, in the beginning of creation. During one day of Lord Brahma, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, there are many Satya Yugas. According to the Vedic calculation, at the present moment, the 28th millennium is current. It can be calculated that Dhruva Maharaj lived many millions of years ago. But the description of the palace of Dhruva's father is so glorious that we cannot accept that advanced human civilization did not exist even 40 or 50,000 years ago. There were walls like those in the palace of Maharaj Uttanapada, even very recently, during the Mughal period. And anyone who has seen the Red Fort in Delhi must have marked that the walls are made of marble and were once decorated with jewels. During the British period, all these jewels were taken away and dispatched to the British Museum. The conception of worldly opulence was formerly based mainly on natural resources such as jewels, marble, silk, ivory, gold, and silver. The advancement of economic development was not based on big motor cars. Advancement of human civilization depends not on industrial enterprises, but on possession of natural wealth and natural food, which is all supplied by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so that we may save time for self-realization and success in the human form of body. Another aspect of this verse is that Dhruva Maharaja's father, Uttanapad, would very soon give up attachment for his palaces and would go to the forest for self-realization. From the description of Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, we can make a very thorough comparative study of modern civilization and the civilization of mankind in the other millennia, Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, and Dwarapa Yuga. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtyam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Gadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vamcha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vibacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Yatra Spatika Kudyeshu Mahamarakateshu Cha Mani Pradipa Abhanti Lalana Ratna Samyutaha. So, true to form, Srila Prabhupada takes the opportunity of a description of a palace to make a big, big preaching point and paradigm shift, as we say. One of the things Srila Prabhupada never tired of doing was comparing Vedic civilization as it is, not the vitiated, you know, shadow of it, not the dead elephant of it, but the real Vedic civilization, comparing that to modern civilization. And why? Because, as Prabhupada put it once, when a reporter asked him why he had come, "I have come to teach you what you have forgotten." Oh, what is that? God. Vedic civilization is totally, totally, wholly, solely God-centered. And not just in a token way, but in a very deep, deep way. Everybody's God-focused. So, Prabhupada chooses to focus on time here. As we know, the modern conception of time is very linear. It's very beginning, middles, and ends oriented. But the Vedic conception of time is cyclical, as we know, and it's so natural, it's so, when you think about it, it's that uncommon common sense, just as the seasons go in a cycle, so does time. So, and this explains so much that the linear concept of time does not explain. As our godbrother, Jhutakarma Prabhu, likes to point out in his mission within the mission, is to debunk Darwin and show that the Vedic view of reality is the actual truth. So he and the late great Sariputta Prabhu uncovered so many anomalies, that means irregularities, things that don't fit into the modern paradigm, which the modern mind conveniently tries to dismiss and ignore and otherwise debunk, whatever. So the fossil record is not consistent. There's so many anomalies in the fossil record. And practically every week in the news you hear about some find that pushes back the appearance of man according to the modern science. And of course, by the inductive method, we'll never get it right. Right? As Srila Saraswati Thakur once put it, even by moving heaven and earth through their organic senses, the materialist will not have a clue, never have a clue, to Adhokshaja, the transcendence, which is way beyond the purview of our senses, mind, material intelligence. So Srila Prabhupada, he would really, this is part of his mood and his mission, to introduce people to ancient wisdom and ancient way of living and ancient knowledge, ancient culture. So it started, you know, Prabhupada being so many downline of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, really when Lord Chaitanya came, he started the spiritual renaissance, and he preached vigorously Achintya Veda Veda Tattva amongst those who were ready to hear. And that ignited a whole, you know, rebirth, renaissance of Krishna consciousness. Of course, as we know, then it became compromised again and lost, and it took Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur to revive it as it is. And in the meantime, what was going on in the West, instead of looking within for truth, looking in inner space where the soul and the super soul are, the reflection of the West was that humanity began to look into Krishna's illusory energy, into outer space, to probe the atom, to look through the stars. And you can see the fruits of that. It's just really gone awry. And the more we try to control and enjoy matter, the more we just foul everything up. So, I'll give you an example of how Srila Prabhupada relished just the Vedic way as opposed to the modern way. It was 1972, New Vrindavan. And the devotees had invited many prominent people to New Vrindavan for Janmashtami Vyas Puja. It might sound rather odd why the devotees would invite, you know, journalists like the New York Times, and all the way from the New York Times to Mother Earth News, they were also there. Politicians, Congress people, senators, and scholars. Journalists and scholars to New Vrindavan. Why? Because the Hare Krishna movement at that point was exploding, and it was there was a lot of interest in who was responsible for all this. And that was Srila Prabhupada. So they invited important people to come and hear His Divine Grace speak. And Prabhupada called the whole week of it the Bhagavad Dharma Discourse. You may have heard of that from your reading. I was lucky enough to be there. And so right in the middle of the discourse was Janmashtami Vyasa Puja. So this was going to be a challenge, how to present this to the journalists, the politicians, and the scholars. So Srila Prabhupada, timeless and yet ever sensitive to the time, place, and audience, expertly explained the meaning of Vyasa Puja. And so he started, you can hear this actually, there's even, if you go to YouTube and you put Vyasa Puja 1972 New Vrindavan, you can see a movie of this. It was actually recorded because there were movie people there, and it was a big thing. There was about 1,000 people there, which is big in those days. So Srila Prabhupada, he's sitting, you've seen this picture too, he's sitting, there's greenery in the background, there's a big red Vyasasana. And he's like the saffron whorl of a scarlet lotus. And he, you know, everybody's there waiting, the cameras are whirring, and everybody's got their pencils. And so Prabhupada, he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you very much for coming." So then he proceeds to say, you know, you're probably wondering, he says, "Welcome to Vyas Puja. You're probably, of course, those who are my disciples, they know what is this Vyas Puja. But those of you who do not know, I think we should explain." And so Prabhupada gives a whole explanation of Vyas Puja, but he draws a big circle around Vedic tradition, Vedic culture, Vedic wisdom. And two of the things he does, the first thing he does is compare the Vedic days with modern days. And he says, And this is really preemptive. We talk about preemptive strikes in the military, you know, when you strike before the enemy can strike. So here he is in front of, you know, the putative shreshtas of Western culture, you know, scholars, journalists, politicians. And he says, formerly, there was no need of books. People were so sharp, Prabhupada said, that they didn't need to, there was no need for reading and writing. Now, reading and writing are practically the bulwarks, the foundation of Western civilization. We were so proud, you know, of reading and writing. You know, before, the savages didn't even have reading and writing. But Prabhupada's saying, there was no need. Because once hearing from the guru, the person could remember what he just said. So, yeah, that was quite an eye-opener. And then he said, and then he went from intellectual degradation to moral degradation. And Srila Prabhupada said, just like if in Vedic culture, everybody's interdependent. In Daiva Varnashram, everybody's interdependent. Everybody depends on each other and their service to Krishna. And so he said, in modern culture, no one cares. No one cares. And Prabhupada was recalling, he didn't say this, but he was well aware of this. There was a famous case, for example, in New York City, where there was a lady, her name was Kitty Genovese. This was on the cover of a famous magazine back then called Life Magazine. And she died a very slow, horrible, painful death. She was stabbed to death 49 times. And she was screaming bloody murder, and people heard it. And nobody would come. Nobody would come and help her. So Prabhupada said, this is because human beings have lost their sympathy, he said. They have lost their sympathy for others. And so and he starts talking about the parampara, and then he knows he has to kind of demystify the parampara. What is this parampara? So what it finally came down to was Prabhupada was describing himself before these people as the dog of God. So I am the dog of God. It is very difficult to please a big person of this world, what to speak of God. But if you simply give that person a little candy, a little lozenge, he used the word lozenge, and it's very easy to please that big man. So I am the dog of God. So everybody goes, Jai! So that was in New Vrindavan, 1972. You can see it on YouTube. And then right after that, Srila Prabhupada went from New Vrindavan to install Sri Sri Radhakalachanji in Dallas, Texas. Radhakalachanji, Prabhupada left a note afterwards, the deity of Dallas. So many pastimes around that event. But the first thing that happened was that Prabhupada landed in the airport. It was before Dallas-Fort Worth Big International. It was called Love Field, appropriately enough. And so the devotees whisked Prabhupada into the VIP room. And I've told this before, but it fits, so I'll tell it again. And he just sits on this makeshift vyasasana, and without any preliminary discussion, he just says, so, there are three ways to fly. Because he had just flown in American Airlines. Three ways to fly. Pigeon, mantra, and machine. Formerly, and as Prabhupada says, formerly, people knew how to train these, I guess they weren't the kind of pigeons we know, but kupota, pigeons that you can train these big birds and they can carry you anywhere, between planets even. And then mantra. Formerly, yogi could dip in the Ganga, and he could, by accessing super soul, he didn't say this, but Sataputta explained this later. He said, yes, the yogi has access to super soul, andantarata paramanu chayantarastam, who has access to who's in every atom, between every atom. So the yogi, by accessing super soul, can be in Haridwar and then can be in Allahabad. Just like that, because he's, by mystic power, by being in touch with super soul, he can emerge. Mantra and machine. So I was standing there, and there was this lady reporter. She looked pretty feisty. She had her stenographic pad in her, and I could, and I was looking over. Pigeon, mantra. She was writing this machine. So she raises her. So, were these ways to fly more efficient than today's 747s? Oh, yes! For one thing, Prabhupada said, there were no, and then he leaned over to Satsarup Maharaj, who was right there, and he said, how you say Satsarup? Jackhais? Hijacks, Prabhupada, hijacks! Yes! There were no hijacks. And those had just started. Prabhupada, you know, was never at a loss for an opportunity. He would hear what was going on, you know, and he would incorporate it right in his spoken word and written word, right in his book sometimes. There were no hijacks. And then she said, this lady was not to be outdone. So she said, then why did you fly American Airlines today? To be one with you. This lady was totally charmed. She turned to me and she said, you know, I like that man. Crazy questions, perfect answers. So Prabhupada, this is part of his mood and mission, to show the superiority of Vedic culture. And since it's New Year's Day, I want to look at one of my favorite purports. Because it not only combines, it not only talks about Varnashram Dharma, it talks about Sankirtan in the same purport. Our Bhakti Raghava Swami is very fond of pointing out the different waves that Prabhupada introduced Krishna consciousness in his time with us. It starts with Sankirtan. He talks about the wave of deity worship, the wave of Sankirtan, the wave of deity worship. It ends up with the wave of community development, which as we know is a work in progress. So listen to this purport. Because it deals with the yugas and it deals with Prabhupada's mood and mission. It's in ninth canto, where Shukadeva Goswami gets into a little kind of a mini Ramayana, the pastimes of Lord Ramchandra. It's canto 9, chapter 10, text 51. Lord Ramchandra became king during Treta Yuga, but because of his good government, the age was like Satya Yuga. Everyone was religious and completely happy. And Prabhupada writes, among the four yugas, Satya, Treta, Dwapara, and Kali, the Kali Yuga is the worst. But if the process of Varnashram Dharma is introduced, even in this age of Kali, the situation of Satya Yuga can be invoked. The Hare Krishna movement, or Krishna consciousness movement, is meant for this purpose. And then Prabhupada quotes a famous verse from the 12th canto. Kale doshinidhe rajan astiko mahaguna kirtana deva krishnasya mukta sangha param brajet. Quote, my dear king, although Kali Yuga is full of faults, there is still one good quality about this age. Simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can become free from material bondage and be promoted to the transcendental kingdom. Close quote, Bhagavatam 12.3.51. And then Prabhupada continues. He says, if people take to this Sankirtan movement, so it's Varnashram Dharma, Sankirtan. If people take to this Sankirtan movement of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Ram, they will certainly be freed from the contamination of Kali Yuga. And the people of this age will be happy, as people were in Satya Yuga, the Golden Age. Anyone, anywhere, can easily take to this Hare Krishna movement. One need only chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, observe the rules and regulations, and stay free from the contamination of sinful life. Even if one is sinful, now Prabhupada extends the mercy down here, listen to this. Even if one is sinful and cannot give up sinful life immediately, if he chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra with devotion and faith, he will certainly be freed from all sinful activities. So he's inviting all of us. Okay, we know you've been doing some bad stuff, but just take to this Hare Krishna mantra and you will get a higher taste, you will be purified, and you'll be freed from all these bad tendencies. And his life will be successful. Then Prabhupada, Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. This is the blessing of Lord Ramchandra. And listen to this. Who has appeared in this age of Kali as Lord Gosundar. So why do New Year's resolutions rarely work? It's because they're really not grounded in anything eternal, aren't they? And even if they're grounded in something worthy, we don't generally, as they say, let go and let God. We try to depend on the strength of our own senses, mind, intelligence. That never works. And Prabhupada writes in the sixth chapter of the Gita, this one line where he says, not by any human endeavor can one control the senses. This, like if you have a little kid, I think Prabhupada did it. Hare Krishna. Like a little kid. He's trying to lift a big, say he's got a 200-pound weight, so he can't do that. But say his father's above him, and his father, maybe his father's a big, strong guy. So he's holding it, and the kid's like this. So it looks like the kid's doing it. Say the father's invisible. Willing suspension of disbelief. And so the son might, but the son actually knows, my father's doing this. So this is how the devotee is. The devotee can do amazing things because he knows Krishna can do anything. So, inspired by the determination of Dhruva and the kindness and the compassion of Suniti, let us go forth in this year 2011 and do wonderful things by the grace of Guru and Krishna. I want to take some questions, but I wonder, there's a comment here from the internet from somebody in the audience, I think. This is from London. I co-taught last class with Braj Kumar. Is Braj Kumar here? No? Is Braj here? Ananda Tirtha Prabhu? Braj, somebody liked your contribution to the last class from London. We want Braj up here. Is he here? Braj, want to come? Bring them up. This is extraordinary. We have this delayed response. We don't usually get this. You have some more from the internet? Okay, we're going to give the old business first crack. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Jai. So Braj, I have a comment from London, England. And it's an interesting comment. It looks like a poem or something. Hey Braj, now we're so glad. Here we are at Kurukshetra. Remember who's seated right in your heart? Now we can start to make it better. Hey Braj, don't be afraid. Pretty soon you'll be so much older. But the minute you think you are this skin, then you begin to feel much colder, especially in January. Right? And any time you feel the pain, dear Braj, refrain. Don't forsake this fight for somewhere, someplace colder. And never listen to the fool. Hey, Braj, be cool. The buddhi you need is on your shoulders. And then they've got some musical notation here. This is sounding very familiar. Oh, Prabhupada, Prabhupada, yeah. Hey, Braj, don't let us down. Here we are at Kurukshetra. Remember who's seated right in your heart, in our hearts. Now we can start to make it better. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Ladies and gentlemen, Sriman Braj Kumar Prabhu. Braj Mohan. See, I got it wrong. It's all Paul's fault. Bhakti Paul from London, England. You can buy Braj's latest CD at the Maha counter, Who Stole My Arti Tray? Okay, do we have any serious questions? That came in 2 weeks ago from London. Questions, comments? I'll read the verse again. Everybody's in shock after that. Okay. The palace of the king was surrounded by walls made of marble with many engravings made of valuable jewels like sapphires, which depicted beautiful women with shining jewel lamps in their hands. Okay. Where's Gita Nagari? Oh, you have a question? Something about the verse and the purport?
Yeah, I missed a quarter of the class or something, so I don't like to ask questions when I miss a quarter of the class. But anyway, there are certain religions, now that I've heard you say the verse, there are certain religions that don't allow depictions of human beings of any kind in their architecture.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that depictions of human beings, especially beautiful women, in architecture. Like, for example, there's a very famous temple in Kalaharjo, I think it is. It's a temple of Vishnu, but outside of the temple, they have all these depictions of demigoddesses and demigods in sexual poses. So I was wondering, what's going on there? And why would they do that on a temple of Vishnu?
I think I'm going to defer this question to Maharaj. Why would they have people in nude poses? Yes, we have something from Janudvip Prabhu. You want to pass the mic?
I've heard the answer to that one.
Oh, good.
It's because, as you know, England sometimes gets a little worried about people performing austerities and he comes and harasses people who are performing religious life because of these people that they maintain his position. So when they build this temple, they put these sexual images so that when the Indra saw it, he would see, oh, so no problem, nothing to worry about there. So what is that? To deviate all the Indra that they did that.
I didn't quite understand that, but I guess I'll take it. Anybody want to unpack that answer? Wait a minute, we have something from Vasudev Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Unfortunately, I couldn't verify the source of this. I just heard it, but it makes sense that these postures, these sculptures are typically also in Surya, the Sun Temple
in Konark.
Outside the temple,
yes,
which symbolizes the material world,
huh.
And on the other side, inside the temple, is a very sattvic, very nothing to do with lust, anger, and greed.
So it sounds like a little test. If you get dazzled by the outside, you may never go inside. But if you want more, go to the real beauty.
It's a way to draw you in from a distance. So what are these sculptures all about? Oh yeah, it looks interesting. And by the time you're there, you might as well go inside.
Aye. Question?
I've heard, not from that specific temple, but when they put these erotic figure temples, I heard that
he's coming with another one.
Hello? It's for the sake of the subtle living entities, like ghosts. And when they can be satisfied, they won't come in the temple. There's something for them.
That's really Vedic civilization. That's subtle, man. That's great. Yes, Janani Vas Prabhu.
It's like in the temple you leave your shoes outside, so when you enter the temple you see these figures. You leave all the lust outside and enter as the eternal servant of Krishna. But this is also, it goes on, you see there in the spiritual world also, they have these pictures in the spiritual world. So everything is coming from Goloka Krishna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Prabhupada writes about that in Krishna book. The men and the women in the spiritual world, they're beautiful, but they're so in love with Krishna that that's the thing. That's the main attraction. There's no lust there, because Krishna is all attractive. He's the source of all beauty. So, anything else? Hare Krishna, Happy New Year, Srila Prabhupada ki jai!